The Here podcast is all about reclaiming your power and reconnecting with your mind and body. By releasing our stories and the power they have had over our lives and creating a compassionate and supportive community, we can bring love, understanding, awareness, and healing to ourselves and to all who need it most. Join me in saying, enough is enough. I own my power. I am ready for the next chapter of my life, and it will be the most amazing one yet. Content may be discussed that could be distressing to you depending on where you are in your healing journey. If the episode becomes triggering, practice self-care by turning off the episode. If you need to talk to someone, you can always contact your local crisis center or RAIN's national hotline via chat on their website at rain.org or by calling 1-800-656-HOPE. All the links are provided in the show notes. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for being with us today on this episode of the Here podcast. Today I have an amazing woman. Her name is Ashley Baxter, and she's a certified life coach, a transformation specialist. That sounds very cool. And she's the founder of Courageous Worth. So she's doing a lot of amazing things, and I'm going to let her talk about all the different things that that she's doing and how she's helping people heal and feel confident and find their self-worth. And so, Ashley, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I would love to hear a little bit about your story and what inspired you and led you to this journey of creating this amazing company and doing everything that you do.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. Well, really, it all spurred out of my healing after I was assaulted, and I'll go into that, but just kind of a glimpse into the future. It really was just me learning to fight for myself and value myself and realizing that if you are going to be fighting for healing, it's maybe doesn't take that much motivation if it's just a 2-day healing of something. But when it's healing from trauma, that is not a 2-day event. It is a very long and difficult road. And I realized that for me to continue to fight for myself, I have to believe that I'm worth fighting for. So that is what stemmed so much of what I do now, is also helping people learn to value themselves as well. But in 2013, I was 34 and I had gone to a massage spa. I had been to this spa for years and years, and the masseuse that I typically go to was going to be moving. And so she, you know, recommended me trying out some different people, of course, not having any idea of what this one masseuse was doing. And it's so interesting. I mean, I hate that this happens to anyone. But I am, I don't know if the word is thankful. I'm not sure what the right word is, but I feel like there's lots of things in my story that break down a lot of misconceptions. And I always like to kind of speak to those because I think that misconceptions are very dangerous and harmful to survivors, and they're very protective of perpetrators, because the longer that people believe these misconceptions, then it kind of allows all these things to go under the radar, or they think, oh, that couldn't happen because that doesn't fit this specific mold that I have in my head as to how those events occur and who does those events. You know, I used to think that it mainly was committed by strangers and you're walking down a dark alley and all these different things, when actually the majority are people that the survivor knows. And so my story, it was at a very high-end spa, not that that matters, but it's just detail. And it happened on the third time I went to see him. The first time I thought that there was something a little bit off, but I hadn't been to a male masseuse in a really long time. And so I thought, well, maybe I'm just not used to it. And then the second time it seemed very, like, there wasn't any red flags at all. And so I was like, oh yeah, I just must have been making that up. That was all in my head. And then the third time was when he raped me during it. And, you know, so many people talk about fight or flight. And what a lot of people don't realize is that there's also the third reaction to trauma is freeze. And that's what I did. And I think that for a lot of people, they don't understand that because it's not something that we see talked about as much. And any response you have to trauma is just an immediate response. Like, it isn't something that you're thinking about this happening. It's just your automatic response to how at that point your mind thinks it can best protect you. And so for my mind, it was to freeze. And all I remember is that my mind just thinking, we'll think about this tomorrow. We'll think about this tomorrow. Just wait till this is over. And it, yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people, not a lot, but a few people would respond with, well, if that was me, I would have, you know, kicked him and I would have run away. I would have screamed. And I think it's important for people to understand that you really have no control over how you respond and that any response is the right response for you at that moment. So, and then it was just interesting because also he didn't act like there was anything wrong. When it was over, he said, that's all the time we have today, which was so confusing. It was so, so confusing. And I am what I like to call a recovering people pleaser. And so I was like, this, he must not have understood. Like, it's all these things that don't make any sense that your brain can do during trauma. Right. And he walked me out to where I was going to pay for the massage. Like, that isn't something that he would typically do. He typically would have just let me go and pay myself and by myself. And so kind of like looking back now, I can see how the first time I feel like he was kind of testing the waters to see if I would have responded in a certain way and said that, hey, that feels weird or that's not appropriate. And again, it wasn't anything major. It was just small things and just that listening to your gut. And yeah. And then that second time, since everything was okay, I just like, oh, this must, you know, it was all in my head. And so just knowing how perpetrators, I don't know if it's, they have a deliberate plan. Like, I always, part of me is fascinated by that kind of psychology and wants to dive into it more, and then part of me is scared to dive into it more. But I just always wonder so much, like, what is going on in these people's minds? And so,
well, it's for that. So I can tell you, I'm so sorry. I did not.
No, you're good. Please. Okay. No, you're good.
Thank you for sharing that. And I wanted to say there is an amazing book I read when I was younger called The Gift of Fear. And it was by an FBI profiler that actually did interview all of these different perpetrators. And what you're saying that just triggered for me when you said where he was testing the waters totally to see your response. So it's very typical, well, according to that book, with perpetrators, even, you know, kidnap, all different types of perpetrators, that they'll go for the person who's not going to scream and yell and fight or that has that type of response. And I also want to say thank you so much for saying that, because I hear so often, I should have done this, or why didn't I do that? Or people are like, why didn't you do that? I would have. You have no idea. It's just the responses that come, and they make total sense at the moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, yeah, I write that down. I'm going to read that book.
So sorry you interrupted, please.
No, you're good. You're good. And when I left the spa, I immediately called one of my best friends, and I hate that this was my response, but it just also shows that about shock and trauma, what it does. But I was actually laughing, and I was like, you're not going to believe what just happened to me. And again, like, it was just, you can't help, like, it shows up really weird and in ways sometimes we don't expect. And I think that's just important for people to also know that it might be someone shaking in the corner. It might be someone acting like nothing is wrong. It can look so many different ways, and we can't make assumptions as to if someone's telling the truth or not based on how they are reacting to trauma.
That's a good point.
And it was interesting because I told my friend, and it was, and she freaked out. And so it was kind of her freaking out that I was like, well, why are you freaking out? And again, it's just all these thoughts not catching up and connecting. And I went home and I texted her and I said, okay, I'm feeling a little bit violated, but I'm sure it'll be okay tomorrow. I'm just going to sleep it off. And the also interesting thing is that typically when I go get a massage, like I don't immediately take a shower because I just love like all the oils they use and things like that. And I immediately took a shower when I got home. And, you know, that's just such a common thing that survivors do after they've been violated. And so I just always thought that was, you know, something deep down inside me knowing like that something had happened. Yeah. So, and I, the masseuse that I had gone to before, she had moved and we had exchanged email addresses. And so I actually reached out to her and it was good to hear from her and hear her say like, no, none of that was okay. Like to inform me how massage boards have very strict rules on what is to be done, like in regards to draping, like all these things, and to ensure that things like this don't happen. So it was really good to talk to her and just to be reminded or be, I don't know, aware of all that. And it, and her to be like, you know, I think you should call the spa and tell them what happened. And I did. And thankfully they fired him. And then they suggested that I also report it to the massage licensing board for the state. Yeah. And I did. And at that point I didn't pursue criminal charges, honestly, because I just wanted to be over with as soon as possible. And so at that point I didn't. And but I did pursue the massage, the state licensing board. And they actually had me file a written complaint where I actually had to look in their guidebook and see all the things that he violated and as far as their terms. And that actually was very good for me. I think that definitions are very important because it was good to see like, oh no, yeah, clearly like there's nowhere for me to be mistaken on this. Like this was definitely not something he adhered to. And I just say that because I think it's also important for all of us to be more educated on also just definitions on sexual trauma in general. I, you know, I actually didn't understand that I was raped until 6 months later. I thought that rape was only one specific action. And it wasn't until I was reading someone else's story and they said that they were raped and they described what happened. And I was like, I don't understand. Like that's what happened to me, but I wasn't raped. And it's nothing about, you know, different levels of trauma or anything like that. But I think it's important that we own the definitions, and especially also when it comes to like criminal cases and things like that, and being able to like, this is what happened. So that was just, I think, showed me how it's just very important for everyone to know definitions and to know, you know, what is okay and isn't okay, what's consent and what isn't consent. So, so I filed the complaint. He denied it, which I didn't expect him to admit it, but he adamantly denied it. I have a copy. They sent me a copy of the letter and he said, I strive to uphold the highest standards in my practice. I have never had a complaint before. I would never do something like this. And that just baffled me. I think for someone to just boldface lie with that much confidence, it just wasn't what I was expecting. And that meant that there had to be a formal hearing in which him and I are both supposed to be there in the state capitol, which is like 2 hours from where I live. And so it was going to be me. And then they needed me to bring 2 character witnesses. So 2 of my best friends came with me and I had to tell every single detail of what was done to me in front of the board, which I believe was probably about 15 people. And then that day they happened to have the local community college where they were doing, people were in massage school training. They're watching how a board handles proceedings. So it ended up being, I think, like 40 people in that room, which was hard, but also, I mean, I was glad that they could hear and be and know that that kind of stuff happens. And thankfully, he didn't show up. So thankfully, for multiple reasons, thankfully, I didn't have to actually face him. And thankfully, that made it very easy for the board to make a decision. And so they revoked his license. And that was just so, and still is, like, I'm just so thankful to know that he can't harm another woman in that way. I did then, eventually I did try to press criminal charges, and mainly just because the more I read about perpetrators, just read how they typically will try to find different avenues to hurt people when one way has been cut off. And so I called the police and reported it. This had been like a month later. Again, I didn't understand at the time that I had been raped, so I didn't even know that. I won't go into like the specifics of what happened, but that there could have been stuff that a sexual assault kit could have still gotten some type of evidence had it, I realized I should have gotten a kit within shortly after it happening. So it really came down to he said, she said, and it was just hard. I mean, I want every perpetrator to face punishment for what they did. But it's also just a really long and hard journey. And I don't say that to discourage any survivor from pressing charges. I think they need to do exactly what is right for them. And I remember I heard your episode where you shared your story and how the first counselor you told was just like, you need to press charges. You need to do this. And I think that I hate that that was the pressure that you got, especially when I'm sure it's such a vulnerable moment in your life and in your journey. And I think that it's important for people to know, like, that decision needs to be the survivor's decision. And survivors go through so much in what has happened to them that to go through these proceedings can be just so re-traumatizing. And it's also so long. So, I mean, to sum it all up, I never actually saw the detective face to face. It was all via phone calls. And a lot of times I had to call her to check back up because months would have been gone and I hadn't heard anything back. And I totally understand, like, I can't imagine the caseload that these people have and everything that they're dealing with. But sometimes when I would call her, she would say, oh, well, we've had these cases come up, and like, she would give me specifics about the cases. And I'm like, so you telling me that kind of makes you feel like my case isn't important or my case isn't as bad as that. And I just hear a lot of stories from survivors where they just don't have the best experience with the legal system. And in the end, after a year and a half of these random phone calls I would be able to have, I called the DA's office because I hadn't heard anything for a while and I didn't really know how the whole process works. And so I was like, hey, I think that eventually you guys will be handling my case. And he was like, we don't know anything about your case, which I think she would have had to like file it officially. But that then I guess got someone contacting her, which she contacted me. And she was like, okay, I talked to the DA's office and they said that only if you confront him and wear a wire and he confesses to what he did, can we press charges?
Wow.
Yeah. And just knowing how he responded to that letter, there's a chance that he would confess to it, but I just had come so far after a year and a half that I just couldn't do that to myself on the slim chance that it would lead to him being convicted or even a court case. Who even knows if what would have gone past that. And I think it was just hard because in my mind, like, the work that was totally done on my case was probably less than a day's work, which is fine. Like, I understand. He said, she said, I'm thankful that someone can't just say that I did something and then I'm sent to jail. Like, I understand why it couldn't go further in the criminal process. I think it was just the fact that it was a year and a half of me feeling like I had to, keep watch of anything and everything I did. Like, if not that I post weird things on social media, but I was like, I don't want to post anything that could anyway be construed that could hurt the case. And so much of me felt like I was in a holding pattern for a year and a half. Like, I shared my story with friends, but I didn't share it publicly until after that was all over. And so I feel like if for anyone that's, and this is just my opinion, but anyone that's thinking about pursuing criminal actions, like just know that it is a long road and it's a hard road. And so just to really, you know, have supportive people around you and just be reminding yourself of the truth and really knowing that you're going to have to kind of have a lot of support and muster a lot of energy because it's going to be a long road most likely. But again, I think that's just everyone's choice, what they decide to do, and that people, survivors, should just be empowered to make that decision and know that they're going to be supported either way that they, yeah, either decision that they make in that. So thankfully right after everything happened, I had gone to counseling at different times in my life for just like depression or anxiety and just different things trying to sort out in my life. And so I'm a huge fan of counseling, or just any form of like talking. I think that just, you know, so I'm so thankful for this podcast. Like, it is so wonderful. And I know that it is healing to so many people, that people that are guests on it and the people that are listening. And I think that the most powerful thing anyone can do in healing is sharing their story. Like, I don't think there's anything, there's so many things that are also powerful and important, but I am convinced that that is the most important thing. I think it just, yeah, it you know, makes you really talk about things. It makes you air out so much of that stuff. I think you also said that one of your episodes about how it just stays trapped inside in the body and just wreaks havoc. So I'm so thankful for this podcast that you have and everything that it's doing. And so I started going to counseling right away, pretty much. And thankfully I had an amazing counselor. She's been wonderful. I love her so much. And I also, I just have some really good friends. I'm not married. And so I live by myself with my dog. I love my dog, but she's not a cuddling dog. Like, when I'd be like sobbing my eyes out, I would go to hug her and she'd be like, "Oh, are we done? Can you let me go now?" So, but I have amazing friends and amazing family, and I was just very thankful for that. And for me, again, like, everyone responds differently. Like, some people, they tell people right away. Some people don't tell people for a while or even years. You know, everyone, again, that's just how we are dealing with it in our own way. And for me, I'm such a vocal person anyway, and I'm very much like, I'm that friend that's like, how are you doing? Like, how are you really doing? Like, we're going to have some heart talks when I hang out. And so for me to act like none of this was going on was going to require so much more energy and strength. And I didn't have it. I was like, and so I need to tell people like, hey, I'm probably not going to be showing up, for a lot of things. Like, please keep inviting me, but I'm probably going to say no most of the time. And just the pain was so loud that I couldn't not face it right then. And so I feel like I told more people than was probably the best at that moment. I just didn't want to have to explain anything, honestly. And
why did you feel like it was more than what would be best, do you think?
I think I was very raw. I also was so concerned with how other people would take it. I've realized that there is never an easy way to tell your story. It is going to be, even if you are used to telling it tons of times, and it might not be as hard on you to tell it, like, it's hard for people to receive. Like, it just is what it is. And I just kept trying to find the most perfect words. One thing that was helpful for me is when I would tell some people, and this sounds weird, but that they would cry. And I was like, because I think there's so much of trauma that, like, this voice inside that tries to tell you it's not a big deal, like, you know, this, you know, and all these just negative self-talk that's just very harmful. And so to see other people react that way, I'm like, oh, this is like a natural reaction they're having just from hearing that. So, but in regards to, I think I was just, I don't know, I would go back and forth as to what I shared and what I didn't share. Not many people know, like, the specifics of what happened. And Yeah, I think it's, I've realized that it's important to know why you're sharing, like kind of what is the hope for it. And when things first happen, it's hard to kind of put those extra thoughts behind it. But me learning to realize when I was sharing for the purpose of someone giving back and helping me in my journey versus when I was just sharing because I wanted to share my story. Or I wanted to help other people, that there's a big difference between that. And it's all about really protecting myself and what's the best for my healing at that moment. Because there were a few people that I confided in and they didn't respond the way that I had hoped they would. I feel like it kind of sifted some friendships. And, you know, I don't know if maybe there was something that happened to them and they had never told me. But yeah, it just kind of really, some people stepped up, some people didn't. And there were some people that thankfully I was able to have a conversation with and say, hey, I just don't understand why you're kind of not showing up as much as I thought. And then they shared with me how they were going through something very serious. I was like, totally get it. I think that's the hard thing. It's like when it's not like one person hurts and the whole rest of the world is okay. We can all be going through so many things. I just think it's important to have those conversations and say, you know, hey, what's going on? And then I could be like, I totally get it. Like, I know you love me. I love you. And I just know that you are maxed out right now and you need to take care of yourself. Like I'm trying to take care of myself too. And so those conversations were really good and ones where just helpful moving forward and everything. So
I really like that because so you share your story and the person may not react the way you are hoping them to, but having that conversation is just because, you know, I'm going through something right now, but I want to be there for you, but maybe I just, you know, don't have the capacity right now, but I love you. And being able to have those conversations in the future, I think that's really awesome to be open and communicative like that. Because you share your story and it's so intense and the other people receiving it, you have no idea what they might be experiencing themselves. And I totally resonated as well with you saying when they would cry. So it's nothing about, and I'm sure the listeners don't think this, but it's nothing about, oh, I want to people to feel bad for me or anything like that. It's that constant, what's wrong with me? I shouldn't be feeling bad about this. And then to see somebody else respond that way. And then you're like, okay, I was responding how I needed to respond because this was traumatic and painful. And I totally get what you meant by when somebody cries when you tell them.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, I think that it's so important to fully acknowledge the pain and damage done. After I was at a better place, I was already doing some volunteer counseling at the church I go to, and I've been very thankful that they actually have a whole group now about sexual assault. A lot of churches like won't even talk about it, you know, and which is horrible on so many levels, I think, and especially with so much sexual trauma happening in the church. And yes, this is a whole different conversation.
And this is the place you go for your enlightenment, for your spirituality, exactly, for everything, then that should be a space for that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So as I would work with people when I was in a healthy place and felt like I could start giving back, I remember that there was, my church did a sermon on forgiveness, and the pastor was saying that I'm probably going to botch this, so I won't say who he is, but he said something to the effect of like, you have to fully be aware of what you're forgiving the person for. And I think I just realized that so much of us want to jump to forgiveness. Like I think forgiveness or whatever that looks like. And yeah, I'll get it that second, but that forgiveness, you can't rush it. Like I kept trying to get to that. And then I realized like, I'm not ready. Like I'm just not ready. And I have to be okay with that. Like I still needed to process things. And then finally there reached a point where So I'm big about having solitude retreats, which granted right now with everything happening, I guess I'm having one really long solitude retreat. It's not exactly what I pictured, but every year I try to go away for a long weekend and just kind of decompress from everything in the world and zone, you know, just technology out and stuff like that. And I went away for a week to a cabin in the woods and was just kind of like determined, like, I'm going to figure this forgiveness thing out. And I read a book about the Rwandan genocide and just, I mean, there were just so many horrible things that happened. And the book was kind of about them moving on and a lot about forgiveness. And I was like, okay, if these people can figure out how to forgive, like, I feel like they're going to be really good teachers. And it's when I really realize what people always say, that forgiveness is more so for the person doing the forgiving. And I can't really explain it. I reached a point where I felt like I was able to forgive him. And I wrote him a letter because I don't know if it ever got to him, but like with all the court proceedings, our addresses were, at least I know his address. I don't know if he knew mine. But so I wrote him a letter. This was probably 2 or 3 years after everything happened. So I don't know if I ever got it. And I just felt like I needed to do this again. I think it was more so for me, but I just told him that I forgave him, but that does not in any way excuse what he had done. And that to my dying day, I will think that he should turn himself in for what he did. I don't expect that to happen, but I think that some people view forgiveness as you saying like, everything's great. Like, I totally forgave you, you know, whatever. And forgiving doesn't mean that you're saying it's okay. It's just you really releasing that hold or kind of that remaining hold that forgiveness part is holding on to you. And it really was so freeing afterwards. But yeah, I personally have loved that part of my story as well, because again, just that balance of realizing forgiveness is important and moving on is important, but it's also important to be crystal clear as to the harm that was done and to not make light of it. I think that our own stories need that as well as every other story. I think if you start to be like, it's not a big deal, all these different things, that it just really diminishes some of the power that is and harm that's done with these things. And I think that we need to take it so seriously because it's hard. I mean, you know, it's such hard work and the realities are so hard, but we need to be crystal clear as to the pain that it's doing and the damage and how widespread it is. And so
that's really, I'm glad you said that. That's so important. The first time I ever even heard this term was when I started doing this work and somebody had said big T trauma and little T trauma. And I hear it a lot now and I just see trauma as trauma. If I start saying, okay, well, your trauma is way worse than my trauma, then I start to go into that space in my head of, why am I so bothered by it? What's wrong with me? And it's just a lot of negative inner talk. Trauma is trauma. So if something happened to you and it's affecting your mood, it's affecting your life, it's affecting you, then it's trauma. And yeah, to stop categorizing it like that or say, oh, well, who am I to tell my story or be upset? That didn't happen to me. It wasn't that bad. But to you, what I went through, how I feel about it, you probably feel about the same about what you went through, and that's all that matters.
Right. No, I completely agree. Because I had, someone said to me, like, that they didn't really understand why it was a big deal. And it was more so them saying, like, I'm supporting you because I'm supporting you. And realizing how, I mean, I think it's clearly a big deal. That comment definitely did not help the things that were going on in my life and in my head. But yeah, I think just acknowledging that it doesn't really matter. Like, the same thing could happen to two different people, and one person could be like totally wrecked and the other person not. that was more traumatic for one person. I'm not saying anything specific. Again, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it is. It just matters how deeply it affected you. And I think just realizing like we need to acknowledge that and let people feel that and, you know, encourage healing, because I think that's where things just get really messy when we just sit in it. And I, like I said, at the beginning, I just really felt everything. I was very vocal with how I was feeling. But then, I mean, I would say that, I mean, I think that we're always, I don't know. I don't think there should be a deadline as to being healed. Some people will say like, oh, I'm healed from this. I don't even think that's a question to ask or have. I think it is what it is. And I think it's about how much of a hold it's having on your life. You know, there are still going to be hard things that happen. There's still going to be things I see that mess me up and upset me. Thankfully, they are much further spread apart than they have been in the past. But I think it's you recognizing where there could be some more work to be done inside of you. And for me, I was really into pursuing counseling. I just really felt like journaling, everything was just focusing on this. The nights were definitely the hardest because I live by myself. And although I had so many great friends and I probably should have asked a couple of them to stay the night with me, that was when like everything got quiet and I couldn't escape it. And I just remember like crying myself to sleep night after night for countless nights. There's this song by The Fray called Be Still. And I would just play, I'd be curious to see how many times I've played this song in total in my life. But I would just play it on repeat. And it, for me, like it just felt like it was a song, like God saying that he was holding me. Like for me, that's what that meant. And cause it says, you know, like when darkness comes upon your bed, like be still and know that I am here and that I'm with you and that you are seen. And so it was just that song just has meant a lot to me. I really,
The Fray.
Yeah. It was I'd never heard that song by them before. And I don't know how I came across it, but I really liked it. And,
amazing. I totally know what you mean about the silence. I know even after all of these years, 3 years ago, I guess it was about 3 years ago, I had a job where I would need to travel to California and stay there a week and then come back. And you think when I first get there, like, oh, you know, I have this whole bed to myself and I'm going to order Chinese food after work, of course, and sit in my hotel room and watch a show. But as even just in the second day, especially by the third day, I would start to feel, depressed. I would start to feel, I'd start to think about those things. And the more times I had to go out there, cause I had to go out every month, I was just like, I just don't want to be here. And I think it was that silence of, cause I have a big full house of kids and my husband and everybody. So, that I love that solitude that you're talking about. I love those moments of stillness. And so I don't even know if I'm making sense now. It was, I don't know if maybe when I'm meditating or if I'm going on a bike ride or a walk, it's intentional. I want to be in solitude. I want to be, you know, relaxed and quiet my mind. Whereas the other was, I was just all alone.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. I completely get it. And I agree. Yeah.
I would love to know, if I may, it a little bit more, and then I want to talk about everything you're doing. About the forgiveness, you had mentioned know exactly what you're forgiving someone for. And so I don't think I've reached forgiveness. The first person that I've been forgiving working towards is honestly myself. And my response is the way I treated myself and, for, you know, even though it's me, maybe it's not odd, but oddly, a lot of guilt and pain from the way I treated myself after that happened. So I'm not at the point of forgiving the other person, but I like what you said. It's not, because when I see that in TV or in a show, might not even be a documentary, and they're like, oh, this person murdered my daughter, but I'm a believer in whatever religion. And so I forgive you and I'm hugging you and now we're going to be friends. And I'm like, what? that's great. Have that much peace. That's awesome. But I don't get it. So yeah. I was curious about that.
Yeah.
About what you're forgiving them
for. Yeah. Oh, and I'll try to stumble through this and we'll see if I get to it.
And not that you have to say exactly what you're forgiving him for, but okay.
Yeah. I mean, and to be honest, like if I ever see him, I have full expectation that I will I'll probably attempt a Ralph Macchio karate kick and it was going to fail miserably for anyone that was born before the 2000s. So I don't think it's something where you're like, oh, I just, you know, yeah, exactly what you said.
And we can have tea now. We can have tea and I forgive you. Yeah,
exactly. And yeah. And for some people, maybe that is I can only speak for me. I think that, I'm just really big about not glossing over things. I think, for me personally, so many people think, I don't believe that certain things happen for a reason. I think that there is just some horrible things in this world, like a good and evil, whatever you want to call it. And I don't think there's that, and just, this is just for me, I'm just speaking for me, but I know a lot of people say everything that happens, happens for your good. Like, I think in my opinion, that phrase for me to fully latch onto that has to mean that this was a good thing. And kind of going back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, I think that is so damaging, again, not just to one person's particular story, but every story. And I think, again, this is just what I think, but I just feel like that's, it helps us feel better about stuff. Like, we want a reason. And I just think that there's just really horrible things that happen in this world. And I think that no matter what horrible things that happen, that good can come out of it and healing can come out of it. And I think those are some of the most beautiful redemptive stories. And so I think that kind of ties into the whole forgiveness thing, not realizing that none of this is saying it's okay. But for me, I think a lot of it was, and this just, I mean, it was a lot with what, my faith and I read the Bible, believe in Jesus. I don't really like to use the word Christian because I feel like that can mean many different things, to different people. But so this was during the week of Easter. And so that's a lot about forgiveness and just thinking how, if I am, kind of the old idea that we're all capable of good and evil, basically. And for me to not forgive him, to me was kind of saying that he's unforgivable, but that I'm totally forgivable. And it gets into that whole thing of how do you measure good and the good and bad of someone? I would be just as capable of doing an incredible amount of harm to someone. And so for me, I think it was realizing that it was just a lot of grace and just realizing I really needed to let that go. Like, me realizing that I need to, if I'm going to, there's a story in the Bible about someone casting stones. It's I need to let down my stone. And I actually, it's funny because I was, where I was staying that week in the woods was, there was a brook in the backyard. It was amazing. I loved it. But I actually picked up a stone. I brought home two stones. I brought home, no, I didn't. Sorry. Sorry. If you know me, I actually bring stones back from all of my journeys around the world. And then cool. Yeah, I love it. It gets confusing on where they come from. So I don't know if there were two. There was definitely one though. And the one stone's the one that matters. So basically I picked up this ugly, heavy stone. And I realized that I need to let go of this stone that I'm holding if I expect to be treated the same way and viewed the same way. And so I actually have that stone here in my house. It's the ugliest stone I have, but it's just that reminder of that
week in of reaching that point of forgiveness. I don't know if any of that makes sense.
It absolutely does. Okay. I love how you said that. Let go of the stone you've been holding. A lady named Kathy Heller, she has some podcasts and a book and everything. And she had said an example of when trauma happens or whatever happens, it's almost like someone handing you a brick and then another brick and another brick. And now you're just carrying these things around, and it's more putting those down and letting go. And you actually did help me start to think of my own forgiveness, because I do know for a long time I hated him for ruining my life, but now I don't see, I see what happened did propel my life in a direction, but my life is not ruined. It took me longer to do what I needed to do and find the people I needed to find in order to live the life I wanted to live and be on my healing journey. I agree with you about healing too. Sorry. There's so many things. That's why I always say the healing journey, because I don't think it ever stops. You know, you just get better and better. But he impacted my life. And once I realized that, I guess that like hateful anger like started to dissipate. And maybe that is my way of the forgiveness is coming. Like, I don't forgive him for what he did, but it's, I don't have that hateful anger. I have a little, but not as much.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like you, in my experience, like you just can't rush it. Like, I think that is, I mean, you know, you're doing the work, we're all doing the work. And I really think that that just comes at the right time. Like, it was kind of this thing that I was like, this is, it's been 3 years, and not like it's been 3 years, like it's time now. It could have been 10 years, 20 years, whatever. But I was like, this is the time I need to kind of figure this out.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, this was my time. It just took 43 years, but here we go. Let's go now. I would love to hear about what you're doing and all the amazing work. How you had said, let me see, I wrote it down here. So I wanted to also mention how you said this happens for a reason. So I say that a lot. Everything happens for a reason. And you saying that, I was thinking, you know what? I can say that, like, if I think of my own story, because it led me to where I am today, which is, was doing this work. And I, you know, there's nothing I love more. So I could say, oh, and that's why that happened. Or maybe I wouldn't be inclined to do this. But if I use that same phrase, thinking, if God forbid something happened to one of my children, I always think, God, whoever, I don't like, oh, that also that phrase, that, and I'm horrible at quoting too, God won't give you more than you can handle. I find myself, I can't handle that. Like, please, please don't give me that, because I don't ever want to handle it. Yeah. But I think that's the thing. It's not that everything happens for a reason. Maybe it's things happen, but you can make good come out of what happened. There's ways to do that, you know, once you're on your healing journey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it, you know, I think that for survivors, we have, especially when you're pursuing healing, that you have to really develop a very strong mental game. There is so much, I don't know, negative thought. I don't know if you call them negative thoughts or false thoughts. And again, there's also dealing with people's reactions, like so many things that you have to internally remind yourself of the truth. There are some things that people said trying to be helpful. I know that their intentions were good and they were just really harmful or just really not educated about it. And I had to train myself to, you know, there were times where I would then have a conversation. There were times then where I was like, I don't need to have a conversation about this right now. And then, like, I always think people have no idea how much grace I've extended to them based on things they've said that is harmful or, you know, and I think, but it just taught me to really keep reminding myself, you know, this is a big deal. And so many times when I first started seeing a counselor, I would say probably the first 3 months was her each time saying, like, this wasn't a mistake. He knew what he was doing. He knew that his job was at risk. But again, it was just so hard. And I think it's so hard for me because it's like, you don't want to believe that someone's capable of that. And then again, I think, you know, if you think it's a mistake, like then maybe it takes away the severity of it or all these different things. And so I'm trying to remember why I was saying that. But all that to say in regards to the thoughts of like, if something happens on purpose or not, realizing that, especially in the line of work I'm working on, that's a lot. Like a lot of people will say everything, like the universe meant this for you. And so I know that I'm very alone in my thoughts that this isn't, that not everything happens for you. It's just interesting because I realize like, it's okay for me to think that. Like in the end of the day, it doesn't, I think, change too much, you know, because I think that no matter what, most people think they are exactly like you said, like that we can heal from these things, we can move on from these things, we can make good come out of it. That you saying that reminded me that one of the thoughts that kept driving me throughout everything was in my healing process was this conviction that no matter how much damage was done, I was going to fight until more good had come out of it. Like I wanted so much good to come out of this. And so from sharing my story, like eventually I did share my story online on Facebook. Me and some people, my church was putting on a conference to educate people about sexual assault and different trauma. And so because of that, I was like, I was one of the speakers and I was like, okay, well, I probably need to tell people why I'm speaking in this. So I just So I recorded a video and I shared it. And I think I had 100 people reach out to me to tell me that something had happened to them at some point. And which is heartbreaking. And some of these people I'd known forever. Some people weren't that close friends of mine. Some people were telling me that something had happened to their sister or something. And also a couple guys that I know told me about things that had happened to them. And it just, again, goes back to that whole importance of how powerful sharing your story is. And that it, I think them just being able to share with me hopefully gave them strength as well. And just they were able to breathe a little bit easier.
No, I've had the same experience. When I first started, I thought, oh, people aren't going to want to hear these difficult stories all the time. And I've had an overwhelming amount of people want to share their story, reach out and say, I've listened to this story and it helped me feel like there was nothing wrong with me. And like, just it's been such a blessing. And I love how in the very, very beginning you said when you decided to fight for yourself. I loved that. I never thought of it that way, but from what I shared earlier, but like most of my life, I was fighting with myself and my body and my soul. And now I'm finally fighting for myself. I love that. And you said that way a long time ago in the beginning.
I love it.
Well, Ashley, I want to know what you do. So from all of this, you have created a business and you offer so much. So I'd love for you to share that. And thank you, by the way, for sharing everything you just did. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, again, I'm just so thankful for this space that you've created. And I think it's wonderful. And so that question is perfect because of what I just said with the whole, and what you brought up, the whole fighting for yourself, because it really, everything I'm doing now stemmed out of that. Because again, like I was saying, like the whole mental battles you have to do, like a lot of the healing journey is with other people, but a lot of it is by yourself. And so learning to fight for myself, learning to say no when I just needed to take care of myself and not do things that were causing me, you know, more exhaustion or pain. And the interesting thing is when I was in college, I remember I was in a Bible study and there's that verse that goes, love others as yourself. And I remember hearing that and thinking, yeah, that would be really bad for anyone else if I love them as I love myself. I actually burned my journal from high school because it was just so much negative self-talk to myself. And you wouldn't be able to see that from the surface. I mean, I was this like I'm a very random person. I have a very silly sense of humor. I love unicorns. And so I don't think that anyone would have thought, I think that if they read those journals, they've been like, what, who is this person? And so I realized that, I mean, I think I was always from that point on, hopefully kind of on an upward climb of learning to love myself. But it was really the healing process that really kind of made me face that a lot and realize that, I don't know, like, I think that's just a byproduct that comes when you really focus on your healing, is that you learn to value yourself more and to love yourself more because you have to face yourself a lot more. And so much of that stemmed kind of this continued journey with that. I also in terms of loving myself involved loving my body. I mean, I'm thankful for this, but for some reason, I honestly haven't struggled too much with my body and the assault. I think that, I mean, I've dated a couple guys since it happened, but nothing like majorly serious. And so that could, you know, I'm fully would not be surprised if things come up when, like, if I date someone serious and get married or whatever, you know, and there's just different things that come with that intimacy. But for me right now, that hasn't played too much of a part. But there were so many comments about my weight when I was growing up, and I had gotten to a certain like weight. And then in my early 30s, before everything happened, I had actually lost almost 100 pounds. And I mean, in a very slow and what some would say healthy way, like just cut out sugars and all these things and started exercising. And I remember thinking, oh, this is the me that I was always waiting for. Like, I'm so glad I haven't met someone yet because this is the real me and all these things. And then a couple of years later, I was assaulted. I also was working from home, so I didn't have a gym right in my office like I did where I was working previously. I also developed hypothyroidism. So all these, I don't know, it could just been me slacking on the lifestyle I'd created that was more physically active, but I gained all this weight back. And I remember thinking, like, I really felt like I was having an identity crisis because I had built this whole idea of me being this whatever, I don't know what words I would have used, like thinner or more physically fit person, to being the ideal me. And so I remember like filling out online dating profiles and being like, should I put like, well, this is how I am right now, but let me tell you how I've been and I'm going to get back to that.
Yes.
And so I kind of came to this point where I would have all these conversations with friends and I would say, you know, they say that you should be able to love your body in any size, shape, whatever, but I just think that's a nice thing that people say and it's not really true. But thankfully something inside me kept saying, but what if it is true? And so I just went on this like 2-year deep dive into TED Talks and books and articles and anything I could find. And basically this journey just to finally really love and accept my body. And so now, like, I love my body and I'm thankful for it. And I will love it, you know, if it's this way forever, if it's a different way forever. And so just reaching that has been so much a part of loving myself, because I've realized that how much negative self-talk, whether it's about our worth as a person, you know, based on things that have happened to us or how our body looks or anything like that, that it is actually just such, it holds us down in so many ways. And I used to think that it was wrong to think well of myself and that it was very selfish and prideful and you shouldn't do it, like, And I realized that actually when we don't learn to value and accept ourselves, that we are seeking that in other people or in these ideas of how we should be. And so really, even though I don't think any of us do this intentionally, but a lot of our interactions when we don't love ourselves is we're trying to get that love from other people. So I, you know, maybe things I was doing, I was like, I want to be seen as the best friend. I want to be seen as that person, like, you have a problem, you call me in the middle of the night, I'm going to be there. And those are all good things. And hopefully the amount of good that came out of those interactions was, you know, the majority of it. But there, what now knowing what I know that there was something inside of me that also was trying to feed those insecurities and where I wasn't loving myself. So I've found that when we try to learn to love ourselves and learn to value ourselves, we can show up to relationships, to ourselves, to the world so much freer and able to give and able to love without any hidden motives. So that was kind of a roundabout thing, but I...
No, you actually, I wrote on my paper, because I, so the audience knows, I like to take notes and learning experiences. I put big light bulb moment, literally right now, because I struggle with, I gained a lot of weight with my last pregnancy and my daughter is 6 now. So it's not like I just had my baby and I struggle. Like I don't, like if we were to go to the pool, I would not wear a bathing suit and different things like that. But my husband loves me just the way I am. And when you said that you are then trying to seek it from other people, I think like when I'm at work, I want to make sure, like, it makes my day if someone tells me that they like this thing that I did, or that this was the best that, or I might do something and it's just like autopilot. I'll do something and I'll say to my husband, do you like that? Did that make you happy? And I realize I do that right when you said that, and it all just click, click, clicked.
No, I think I did that for years. Like, especially in me being a people pleaser, like, oh yeah, I always wanted to have the funniest story to tell. Like thought so much by getting people's attention and by them thinking I'm funny or different things. So
yeah,
I get it.
That's great.
I get it. Yeah. So I have different programs I've created. Like, some is one-on-one coaching. I'm putting a lot of it right now into some self-led programs, because a lot of mine are, they're either one-to-one or they're group-led. And so, for example, I have a body confidence program and it runs a few times a year. And I do feel like the group component is like, it's actually the middle in regards to pricing. But I think it's better, honestly, than like doing one-to-one with me, which is the most expensive, and also better than doing the least expensive, which is self-led, because there is so much power in hearing all these other women come together and talk. Like, one of the last groups I went through, I remember one person saying, I know why I'm here, but I don't see why any of y'all are here. And they all are like, I was thinking the same thing. Like, I know why I'm here, but why are you here? You're great. And just how we all just struggle with this. They say that 90% of women struggle with accepting their body. And I think 10% of that truly hate their body. So we are not alone. And it's also something that becomes a common talking point when we're, you know, out somewhere. It's common, like it's like a bonding thing, is to talk about negatively about our bodies or things that we want to fix about our bodies. So it is a real thing, and it's hard, because there's so much that, you know, there'll always be all this talk in the media and things on pictures and images, and realizing that also it's not just about like the size of your body. Like, it could be anything. It could be aging. It could be revolving around racism. It could be revolving around what has happened to your body, about if you have a sickness. Like, there's so many ways that how we view our body and our relationship with our body really impacts us. So anyway, I could talk about that forever.
You are so right. Like, everything you're saying is like all the, even when we see people, we're like, oh my gosh, you look like you lost weight. I mean, that's fine. But, you know, on the other hand, like, why does it matter? I would love, love, love to love my body no matter what state it's in. And obviously I want to, you know, get healthy. It's important to be healthy, whatever healthy looks like, because there's all different types of body types. But I think that would be amazing. I don't know. I just think
it's great. Well, and you hit on a great thing that I was very important for me to learn, is that how you view your body, like your body image, it's not a physical health issue. It's a mental and emotional health issue. And realizing that it's very important, like, that's one of the most powerful things, just you can separate those two things. So for example, for me, like, my physical health, physical activity, like, it's not at the best. Like, I definitely have some areas I could be healthier in, but I just have to always check myself when I make physical health goals that it is in no way tied to the worth of my body. And that, you know, it's, if I say I want to exercise to lose weight to fit better or more comfortably into an airplane seat, that is completely logical. That is, if that's a goal of mine, and that does not in any way you know, as long as I'm careful with it, does not convey anything about my body being less or more worthy. It's just that would actually be a beneficial thing that I would have a much more pleasant experience when on an 8-hour flight.
Oh, I love that. Because I tend to make goals like, oh, I want to lose 40 pounds so that I will, oh, I actually have this written somewhere in some type of a goal thing. Why do you want to lose weight? I want to lose weight so that I feel beautiful and attractive. Mm. Oh, okay. So until I make that, I am not beautiful and I'm not attractive. And I didn't even think of it when I was writing down that goal. But if I want to lose weight because it will help like if I'm doing a yoga pose, it will help make that easier for me or whatever that I love that. That's awesome. I'm going to go rewrite my goals.
Do it.
So that's awesome. So Courageous Worth is your company, your brand, and you have lots. So you have the Body Confidence course. Mm-hmm. And what else do you offer?
Yeah. And then one that's called Undeniably You, that right now I've just been doing on one-to-one coaching, but I'll be also putting that into a video self-led one. And that's just really about confidence and learning to love yourself. I fully believe that every person here that exists on this world, that world exists, is unique. And that, you know, you and I could say the exact same thing, but people are going to resonate differently with each of us. There's going to be some people that just really get the way you say it or get the way that I say it. And so recognizing that we each have a unique thing to offer the world. And it doesn't have to be like, oh, I'm a great volleyball player. It could just be you, just you showing up in who you are, your personality. It could be you impacting two people in this world, or it could be you impacting like thousands of people. And just realizing that when we try to be like someone else, or we try to fit another mold, that isn't us showing up. That's us. It's a copy showing up, and copies are never as good as the originals. And we need your original, because there's only one you. And so recognizing that the more that we can kind of just put off all these negative thoughts about ourselves and really just step into our value and our worth, that it just makes everything, I believe, a better place. I feel like if everyone in the world did that, we would have so much more peace and love and just joy. Sounding kind of hippie right now, So that's just really what I'm all about, is helping people recognize and live out of their worth, whether that's in how do they view their body, or in how they just show up. Because so much of my life was that, my entire life was about me feeling like I was too much or not enough. And then me always trying to fit those ways, or me trying to just kind of disassociate with myself so that I wouldn't have to acknowledge how I hated myself. And I would just pour myself into serving others. And yeah. And so I think I've just been so thankful for this journey I've been on. And I just want to help other people in that as well.
Oh, that is awesome. Ashley, you're going to change the world. I love it. You're absolutely right. I think that if people were doing work that they truly are passionate, excited about, or if they were stepped into their worth and were living that way, what an amazing world. And I also like how you said it might just be impacting two people. It might be impacting millions. Because we mentioned that earlier, when something bad happens, making something good come from it. And I think that's important for the listeners to know, is it's not like you have to go out and, you know, make a huge impact. It might be just the way you're showing up for yourself and your family, or just showing up for yourself and how you feel when you're living your life and the things that you're enjoying. So I think that's awesome.
Thank you.
Ashley, I want to respect your time. I had so much fun. I've learned so much as well. One thing I had written down here that I learned as well, that we don't need to go into, but I wanted to make sure that the listeners knew, is the different types of rape. So I don't know if you have any resources. I can look up for some resources and add a link, because I want to educate myself about definitions, because when you said that, I didn't even know that. So that's why when I talk about my journey, I mention like, you know, rape or molestation. Like I have all the, I probably don't even, you know, like try to cover all the bases. So.
And a lot, it's hard because it's just interesting. I think it's important for everyone to know But like for me to describe, for me to inform someone like in my life why it was rape, I would have to get very specific and explain it. And so, and again, not that it's not about if something's rape or sexual assault, you know, whatever. Yeah. But I do think it is important just to know the terms. And I can't remember if I have that on my website or not. So I did, there is one page on my website. None of my work is fully geared towards healing from sexual trauma, but that's definitely in it. It can be in any of those, part of, you know, body confidence. Like there's, we spend a few weeks focusing on things that have been done to you, things that are said to you, and things that you've done or said to yourself. And then that just like making peace with your body. So that looks different for everyone based on their experiences. And so I definitely come at everything with my own viewpoint. So I always, you know, definitely have the eye or the perspective of a survivor, but my stuff is really for anyone. But there was so much, there's so much work I've done from working with survivors, volunteering with them and counseling them on the side, that I put it all on one page on my website. If anyone, it's theashleybaxter.com. And at the very bottom in the footer, there's a link that says Me Too Resources. And on that, yeah, so it, it's just at the very bottom because I didn't want to get confusing with all the different things I offer in the menu and stuff. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe I'll switch one day. But anyway, but it's at the footer. It's just a button you click and then it'll take you to a whole page that has a lot of different things, like it has the RAIN national hotline information, which has so many great resources on so much stuff, like for survivors and for supporters of survivors. And then I also listed a bunch of books that were either meaningful to me or that have been suggested to me. I put a whole bunch of songs that meant a lot to me. I listed your podcast. I've listed a friend's online support group. And just a whole bunch of different things, but there's a lot of links on there. So like, for example, going to the RAINS website, it will go through a lot of these definitions. And yeah, so I think that's just very helpful to just be aware of that. And I, for the definition of rape, like I actually just go, which I think this is what RAIN quotes, but it's the FBI's definition. But okay. the thing to know is that in regards to criminal cases and stuff like that, which I do list some links as to where people can find out more about different justice options, but the terms might be categorized different in every state. For example, I think in my state, like they're called sexual offense, and then it's like different categories. So, you know, there's kind of different reasons to know different definitions, but I think just broadly, like looking at RAIN's website or the FBI's definition, like that really will kind of give those overarching definitions, but just knowing when you, if you're pursuing criminal situation or justice options, that might be a little different.
Yeah. And the only reason I mentioned that, because we were having, it was so uplifted right there. So I didn't mean to bring that in, but I'm glad I did. Cause you had mentioned so many great resources, was that in case there were people like me listening that went, huh? What?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm a big believer in being, even with my children, they can name all their body parts correctly. They can speak to things, you know, correctly. So just, you know, when you're describing things or you need to share.
And, yeah.
So I thought that was great. And I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, and that also, I forgot to mention, so also on that page, for anyone interested, I had created two guidebooks. And so they're free. You can just sign up for them. So one is a guidebook on how to share your story. And the other is a guidebook on to help supporters. And I wish that I had these when I was going through everything. You know, the sharing guidebook goes through so much. It goes through getting clear on why you're sharing, who you're sharing with, what you expect from that person, or what you're hoping that person is going to respond with, about practicing self-care before, during, and afterwards. And just a lot of things that hope, I mean, no matter what, again, it's hard, like, and it's not pretty, but hopefully that guidebook can just really help you. And with it, it also comes with a separate PDF that's for supporters of survivors. And that, I just went into a lot about misconceptions and all these things to really try to help make a survivor's life easier in regards to how other people are responding. People can read that and still respond poorly, but I'm hoping that it will be less poorly than they would have, and just really eye-opening. And so anyone that, I mean, a supporter or a survivor can download these, but whenever you download them, you get both of them that you can share as needed. So
I really appreciate that. And I will add links to that. I think I wish I had that. And I appreciated it when you explained it to me, because when I was starting the podcast, I had someone say to me, well, you should probably coach the guests on how to share their story, because you don't want them to be like, gosh, what is it called? Oh, you don't want them to share it like, oh, I'm a victim. And she was going on and on. And I was like, you know what? No, I want them to share however they need to share. And that's their story. They're sharing it with the world, however it needs to come out. And that's that. And so when you had mentioned, when we first initially talked, oh, I have a guide on how to share your story, I immediately was like, I don't know about this. But then you started to go into what that was. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish I had that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not so much about, honestly, like, it has a worksheet in it for people that like to fill stuff out, where it's like, here, you can kind of walk through things. But it's really like, when it comes to that part, it's like, you just share what you want to share. It's really more so about protecting yourself as far as your expectations and just caring for yourself. So yeah.
I love that. And I need to post that link to your guide, because even for all the guests that want to be on this show and who may be listening and thinking, I want to share my story, but I'm kind of scared, that could be very helpful. Yeah. And I also want to mention, you're starting a podcast.
Yes. so it's the Courageous Worth podcast, and it should be launched by the time this episode airs. Let's hope so. but it's really just conversations about people learning to value themselves and the importance of valuing others. So yeah,
it's so needed. Cause I mean, geez, just that talk about the way you see your body and your weight, I'm like, oh, mind blown. That is awesome. Mm. All right, Ashley. So you mentioned they can reach you at ashleybaxter.com.
The Ashley Baxter.
The, yes. Sorry, everybody.
There's a pro windsurfer named Ashley Baxter in Hawaii, and hers is ashleybaxter.com.
So if you're looking for some body confidence and you go to the pro windsurfer at the ashleybaxter.com. And are you on social media too?
I am. I'm on all the places, and it's all at the Ashley Baxter. So pretty simple. Yeah. I know. I felt like it was like, I'm the Ashley Baxter. I'm like, no, it was just the closest thing I could find.
I love it though. I'm the Ashley Baxter.
Yeah, watch. How about it. That?
Exactly. Wonderful. Ashley, thank you so very much. I appreciate everything that you shared. I know this is going to be incredibly helpful to the audience. And before I let you go, is there anything, I don't want to leave anything left unsaid. Is there anything else that you wanted to make sure you left the guests with, or...
No, I just want to encourage anyone that is listening to this that is a survivor, just to know that you are worth pursuing the healing journey, and that if you don't have supportive people around you, that there are people out there that exist. Find a support group. Keep sharing your story with trusted people until you find some that do respond well. And realize that this is probably a new thing for them as well. And so try to extend them some grace, and you know, use resources like that free guide I have or other things. Cause I think that sometimes people, respond poorly because, again, they just don't know. A lot of people wouldn't say anything to me cause they're like, I just don't know what to say. And so I did get very clear with them as to what I need for them. And I think that is powerful because it's you standing up for yourself. And it's also helpful because you're showing them how to treat you and what you really need from them. And, you know, and them just saying like, yeah, I can do that. Or I can't do that right now, you know? And so I think it's good on all sides. But yeah, just knowing that you are so worth fighting for. And one thing I realized when I was in my healing process was that I used to think that sexual trauma is the worst thing that could happen to someone. And then I realized that one, there's so many difficult traumas. So again, like, how can you measure them? But the worst thing would be is if you couldn't heal from trauma, like if healing wasn't possible. And realizing that healing and hope is possible in the worst situations is, I think, the greatest thing. Because if that wasn't possible, that would be the worst tragedy. So no matter what your healing journey looks like, it most likely will be hard and long, but knowing that you are worth it and that there is hope and that each step that you take, that it's just going to bring more and more freedom into your life, even when you're going to have little setbacks. Like I felt like sometimes it was like that Paula Abdul song, 3 steps forward, 2 steps back. I think that's how it goes.
Yeah.
gotta love Paula Abdul. but yeah, just know that you're worth it and just keep pressing forward. And sometimes that means just standing and that's fine. But just knowing that you're worth it, your healing's worth it, and you are not what happened to you. You are not defined by what happened to you. You are so much more than that. You are worthy. And yeah, that's it.
Thank you, Ashley, so very much. And I really look forward to speaking with you again.
Same here.